And thank you very much, organizers, for this opportunity. Actually, it is a way to refresh my notes also from Edinburgh lectures, which Slava was sponsoring and initiated. It's still to be published, but it will be published. Oh, okay. The subject of my topic is Kardemann estimates. It is a very powerful tool in many areas of PDE. And in today's lecture, I'd like to introduce Kardemann estimate, formulate them for fairly general second-order equations, and give probably outline of proof for a very particular equation, which is of interest to Helmholtz equation. I consider second-order partial differential operator with C1 principal coefficients. And L infinity remaining coefficients. The Kardemann estimate is a weighted L2 estimate, which contains large parameter tau. That bounds all derivative of function up to order 1. By L2 norm of function, weighted L2 norm of function plus bound returns. Probably most convenient form of Kardemann estimates, which are proof of any function in H1 omega. And it's assumed that operator AU of this function is in L2. Because if it is not in L2, it is obviously stupid. Observe that function is not in H2, it is in H1. So it's an energy level. But you can justify everything. And this is estimate which holds for any large value of large parameter tau. It was a great idea of Kardemann to introduce evolution into any type of equations. In fact, the first estimate of this type was obtained by Thorsten Kardemann in approximately 1938. And in his case, A was operator of first order in the plane with continuous coefficients, or C1 coefficients. Minor. It's e to the power tau phi. Phi is, I tell later what is that. Phi is called wave function. This phi, I will be writing this phi as exponent of another function, e to our lambda psi. This all makes sense. That Kardemann introduced these estimates and used them basically for elliptic systems to prove first results of uniqueness of continuation for elliptic system with non-analytic coefficients. Because there is Holmgren theorem, it is old story, Cauchy-Kovalevsky, and the textbook that analytic Cauchy problem has unique solution everywhere except across non-characteristic surface. But if coefficients are non-smooth, then it was first Kardemann who started this uniqueness. And for this purpose, he used estimates. His idea was to introduce evolution into problem without any evolution. So if A is elliptic operator, the tau is special addition of parameter which can be considered as time parameter, which is missing in the original problem. Later on, I give you examples how this thing is applied and what is used as these estimates. Probably today, hopefully. But now, what are results about? How to obtain these estimates and what are conditions for these estimates to hold? that function psi is called pseudo-convex. And omega is domain in, basically, in Rn. We assume in this lecture that boundary is C1, but in fact it could be Lipschitz, could be relaxed, I think. Function is called pseudo-convex if two conditions satisfy. So I assume that function is smooth enough, that C1 is certainly enough for all purposes, but in fact it could be. Yes, it equals none, of course. The function psi is called pseudo-convex if, first of all, gradient of psi is not characteristic. I can always assume in this Carlyman estimate that A is only principal part of operator, because you can see that lower order terms are very easily absorbed by this large parameter tau. All first order derivatives and functions sitting here. So if A has first order derivative, zero order term, you can observe by right hand side by choosing tau large. So here is just A's principal part. And first of all, psi should be non-characteristic. And second, there is so-called pseudo-convexity condition, which reads the following. I will write a pretty complicated expression, which in fact I will never use after that. If you take symbol of this operator now, in other words, just substitute instead of differentiation theta, you find thing which is looks like definition of convexity. And then there is additional term which is due to variable coefficient. This must be greater than zero, or we can even qualify this dependence, some constant, positive constant times psi square. If real vector psi is characteristic. A little bit more than characteristic. This is pretty complicated condition called pseudo-convexity condition. This condition showed up first, I think, in this form in the book of Hermander of 1963. A is symbol of original operator.
So it's just
the highest order terms, right? It's highest order terms, yes. It's quadratic. It's second order operator.
It's linear.
Yes, of course. It's linear. I forgot to tell you. It's linear. It's grad psi at the end, yes. Oh, sorry. Grad psi, of course. This is derivative is a space derivative. This is derivative with respect to characteristic variables. Because this dk is just space differentiation. But with zeta, I write it differentiation of symbol. And this condition first showed explicitly in, for example, in the book of Hermander of 63. And it comes back probably to functions of several complex variables, to Debye condition function several complex variables, which is called also pseudo-convexity of the boundary of the domain, where the origin of this condition. On the other hand, if you look a little bit more carefully at this condition, the proofs that in fact it is a condition of sub-ellipticity of operator with parameter. Later on I will write the operator with parameter. Parameter tau, but so far I did not introduce operator with parameter. So it's only sitting in the estimate. But I will tell a few words about proof. In the first sum, there is only real values of psi. That's the issue. There is no complex values here. So these are conditions on real characteristics. For example, for elliptic equations, this condition is void. It's automatically satisfied. There's no condition. That's why I choose function in such a way. It's a bit more convenient. And that's why I chose also second-order operators, because in fact, in applications, second-order operators is main application field for Carleman estimates. For higher, you can write them for higher-order estimates, but they're not efficient. In most cases, they simply don't work for higher-order equations. There are exceptional cases and they work. So operators with simple characteristics. Okay, now first result is the following. Suppose if we take function psi, which is pseudo-convex in omega bar. Then estimate one, Carleman estimate, holds for some positive lambda. No, lambda. Lambda. Lambda is large, another large parameter which is sitting in number two. And purpose of lambda is to multiply, to magnify convexity, because function e to power x is convex function. But if you introduce parameter like parameter tau and consider this function a function of psi, with growing tau, convexity will be growing. It's a way to magnify convexity. Now, probably a few words about proof. Then I go to examples, and then I like to give almost complete proof of very particular case of this problem. In general case, proof is, I cannot give, tell you more things because it's pretty technical thing. Just kind of idea of proof. Idea of proof is, first is pretty innocent substitution, that you like to remove exponent from estimates. So do substitution. If you do substitution, then this operator A will be replaced by operator operator with parameter. Later on, I give example where everything will be very explicit. So instead of this estimate, because what is happening if you plug in U, this U into estimate, this thing will commute, but not quite commute. With something price for commutation, this price showing up here. So we obtain estimate with parameter. I right now to like to rewrite this estimate. New estimate, lower order terms will be same terms, but exponent will disappear from the business. Now instead of this operator, I will have transplanted operator. And I will not write boundary terms because that's sort of to save space a little bit. Because boundary terms are arbitrary, and that's roughly speaking everything you can obtain integrating by parts. First order derivatives and function. And that's exactly how upper rules can be obtained. And now what is crucial idea? That this operator, as operator with parameter, is not elliptic anymore, because for large tau, even for elliptic operators, you can have characteristic. If operator is really elliptic with respect to both parameters, then you just do Fourier transform. This is sort of adverse estimate. But it is not characteristic. Sometimes it can happen characteristic varieties, for example, hyperbolic operator. Or you take elliptic operator, and since you use I here, this symbol can be zero. There's nothing wrong with that. Then the crucial idea is still how to get positivity, because this thing can be zero somewhere. If a thing is zero, you have these conditions. Because this condition is immediately obtained if substitute this thing by psi and take Fourier transform. And this condition is obtained if you let tau to go to zero with some sort of limiting procedure. Okay, now how to save situation if symbol is zero. Then the main idea was the following. It is basically idea which is coming from hyperbolic equations. And Hermander combined ideas of energy estimates of hyperbolic equations and pseudo-convexity. The next idea is the following, that we take this term, we do the following. And we write obvious inequality that this term is greater or equal than difference of two terms. But here, instead of plus, you write minus, you write plus tau. That's only difference in two terms. So you subtract something, you obtain inequality. But the point is that this form is divergent. After this subtraction, you obtain something that you can easily integrate by parts and move all derivatives to something lower of the terms. If you integrate by parts, you obtain new quadratic form, and symbol of this form will be precisely this thing. So what is happening, after all? You can combine estimates from two parts. That if principal part of your operator is zero, then there is lower order term, which will be not zero, which is positive. And positivity of symbol of this term is precisely pseudo-convexity condition. Of course, it needs careful implementation, everything technique, and now there are several ways to do it. For example, estimates with boundary terms. In Hermander book, it's estimates only in compactly supported functions. With boundary terms, there is integration by parts technique. You can do it direct integrating by parts, and for elliptic equation, some equations just can do it. It's even better because you control everything explicitly. In fairly general situation, it was obtained by Daniel Tataru in 1996. With all boundary terms included. I think the same smoothness of coefficients. And idea is that, roughly speaking, you can, here you obtain some inequality for symbols of operators, but if you integrate by parts, you lose, roughly speaking, one power. Here it will be second order operator. Here, if you integrate by parts, you lose a little bit. And if you combine the whole thing, you have to use pure differential operators to go through the business. But through the differential operator, you will have inequality for symbol, positivity of some combined symbol. So you combine symbol of this operator plus this thing altogether. So if this thing is positive, then you don't need this. If this is zero, then this is positive, and it saves the whole situation. But result is not differential operator anymore, it's pseudo differential operator. You have positivity or some inequality of this type of pseudo differential operator. And you like to obtain this estimate with boundary terms. It is a form of Gordic inequality with boundary terms. And if you use all this technique, basically proof is very, very transparent, very clear. But it needs a lot of technical preparation. I will attempt to give more complete proof for particular operator, for elliptic operator, which I recently was considering, Helmholtz operator. And what will be new ingredient in these proofs. So far, probably, I will give examples. Examples, say, for elliptic operator. If A is elliptic, that any function with non-zero gradient is pseudo-convex. This condition of pseudo-convexity. That any such function is pseudo-convex because there is no condition. If operator is a hyperbolic operator, that's another very interesting fellow. And I write symbol of this operator, and I like to calculate your condition, very, very simple case, with constant coefficients. Suppose what this condition will mean then. I will choose special weight function, and you will see what is the advantage of this choice of psi. This weight function will be distance to some point, minus, it's almost distance in wave metric, but not quite slightly deficient distance. We have parameter to play here, parameter theta. I like to check this condition for function psi, because that's what we expect from space-time geometry. We expect probably distance, and we expect time participating, but with opposite signs. And since this is condition of second-order conditions, you can see that second-order derivative, it is sort of convexity condition. So it's hopeless to use linear functions. It will never work for linear functions. But then you try to quadratic forms. If you go to quadratic forms, since it is isotropic, take Euclidean distance. And since it is time domain, take minus here. So it's almost dictated form of this rate function. Now I will calculate form H. In this case, this matrix is diagonal, so you can very easily calculate that this thing will be simply 8, and then will be psi squared. You have to sum this psi squared. Because what will be sitting here? If you differentiate this operator with respect to, you see what sine will be. Sine will be plus, because there is minus here. If you calculate this thing, and symbol of this operator will be this is time variable, psi sub zero, is symbol of this operator. So just calculate honestly everything which is staying here, plug in only real values, and calculate this thing. Now, if you go to time variable, you obtain minus same thing. If you go to time variable, if you differentiate with respect to A, you obtain, I think, we have conditions that xi is real characteristic of this equation. So we have conditions that xi square is equal to A now I plug everything in this form and I try to figure out what are conditions for theta. I forgot theta, I'm sorry. Theta is sitting right here. Now, from here, we just write what is, say, xi subsquare, plug in right here, it obtains that 8 is factored out. Xi sub 0 is factored out. What stays inside will be 1. A sub 0 square here. 1 minus theta square, A sub 0 square. That's it. So to make this form positive, theta should be less than product of theta and A sub zero should be less than 1. Time we use later this example for applications for optimal control. And there are similar conditions for variable coefficients. I will not write with these conditions because it's just more complicated conditions. But in more general case, if A is variable coefficients, the pseudo-convexity conditions, they reduce to some monotonicity condition. So roughly speaking, a generic condition would be the gradient of A dot gradient dot A x minus A is positive. This is more or less generic condition of this kind for variable coefficients. If gradient, if A sub zero is zero, then this condition is void. Don't need this condition. This type of condition. This will guarantee pseudo-convexity. This condition, by the way, is condition which is very, very well known in seismic. This condition which same Herglotz and Wichert used in one-dimensional case. That monotonicity, density is monotone with respect to depth. Because A is, if you like, center of the earth, and this will give you the same monotonicity condition. This condition, there is interesting link between cardinal estimate, uniqueness continuation, and inverse kinematic problem, and not completely understood yet. There is suspicion that as soon as you have absence of trap rays, you can build pseudo-convex function. So take metric, this metric, I will consider this wave operator. Suppose you don't have trapped rays. It's most general condition. If you have trapped rays, the rest situation is pretty bad. You can forget about that. Or you have a simple metric, for example. Is it true that you can build a pseudo-convex function then? That's still unclear situation. So this thing exists on its own. But this condition is not artificial, it is known. Moreover, this condition is opposite sign holds that things are really bad. I can tell you later that what's going on then. Now I'd like to take particular case of operator, Helmholtz operator. Recently I was working on this Helmholtz operator, and purpose was to increase stability in these problems, because our field suffers a lot because of instability. If you go to applications, try to do something, then problems are pretty unstable, and any way to increase stability is very valuable, and anything you can do about that. So probably I will erase all these examples and now go to particular operator and try to give you more details of proof then. So that actually whole work can be finished, in fact. And all proofs is just needs integration by parts. It can be completed in one day. It's not a big deal. But I will not waste your time doing this in Blackboard. Okay, so second theorem which I like to present is about for Helmholtz operator. Now function phi, I will select very particular function. And estimate, I like to prove right now, so the tree say operator, I will be using Helmholtz operator. Plus boundary terms. I will not write boundary terms because they have the same kind as before. So not to contaminate it. No, but now I like to use precisely this function. Yep, it's slightly different. But I like to give you precisely this form of estimate, because I like to use all these things later on. Basically, it is similar estimate, these little changes. If beta is large enough, you can just drop this thing, go to constant, so it doesn't matter. Now, I will use the same substitution as written here, and actually it is quite useful substitution. Precisely the same substitution, like to give parallel. But instead of abstract situation, I give you very particular computations. And this can be finished by integrating by parts. And that's what I did, because what I like to do the following. I like to obtain estimates with constant independent on K. And this is something which is new. Because this Carleman estimate is saying that given any operator, there is constant which depends on this operator such as this estimate holds. If you take Helmholtz operator, that constant, of course, will depend on K, on frequency. But I like to, at the very end, I like to obtain estimates which show increased stability in the Cauchy problems, that if K is increasing, the stability is almost linearly increasing. So this I need estimates which are K-independent. If you look at, if you try to use this big machine for this estimate, this big machine most likely is too general to work, because what we're talking about very subtle effect about lower order terms. K is not in principle part even sitting somewhere in lower order terms. If I switch sine of K, it will be wrong. So I have to capture this in terms of sine of K. But another thing is that Helmholtz equation is transition to wave equation. So I wrote this thing for wave equation. If you do Fourier transform on K, you obtain wave operator here. So there are some relations in between wave equation and Helmholtz equation. But so far, what I achieved recently was some increased stability in the Cauchy problem for Helmholtz equation, but I still cannot do it for wave equation. So Helmholtz is halfway, sort of. It is approximation of, and it turns out to be more controllable than the original wave hyperbolic equation. Okay. Now explicit, what I'm doing right now, I'm plugging in this substitution. And Laplacian, I will save you from repeating these long, absolutely standard computations. What we do is just apply differentiation formula but applying Laplace operator to product of two functions. K squared, nothing happened. Of course, just think is factored out in K squared. But in remainder, something is happening. It's very important. Basically, we will trace only this part because all computation is long. I don't like to go through all details of this computation. But I like to show what will happen then. This is operator which I will denote by, say, Laplacian. Tau. I will drop K dependence. K will be fixed here. But what I'm doing right now, I'm writing very simple inequality that it's absolutely similarly estimate, Carleman estimate for this equation could be transformed into similar estimate, but instead of this operator, I obtain that operator. Just result of switching order. Now I'm repeating general argument. General argument is this, basically this inequality is pointwise inequality. Yes, it's obvious that this thing is greater than this thing because it's subtracting something. But in this, in particular case, we can calculate explicitly term which we subtract. Of course, it's V here. Now switching signs with tau right here. And you can see that there will be a lot of cancellations. If you open this thing, subtract the same thing with minus tau, there will be a lot of cancellations. I will simply write result because it's nothing but calculus 3 computation. Okay. Now it's not inequality. Now I just write exact equality right here. Exact equality minus 16 tau. And you will probably even have time to check some details. I mean, like from Slavia, from the same country, and there's always some KGB was sitting and checking something. There's always a way to check something, if not science, but at least color of weather or something. But here everything is explicitly checkable. When I was preparing this lecture, I was just checking all computations in real time. Here, of course, all constants, all coefficients are very important because we're talking about sensitive thing because time frequency independent estimates. Well, how K is showing up here? That's what I'm a little bit puzzled. There should be no K here. But anyway, it needs careful calculation. I mean, I have paper with me, just let me look at it more carefully. No, there must be. Yep, it is correct. So now what I will do, I will take a couple of terms and show that actually the result of integration by parts really gives you positive quantities. I will not finish the calculation because what we observe right here, observe quite interesting thing that this form, with exception of last term, which is negative, this form is divergent basically. Because what is staying here, you can integrate by parts. For example, move V onto Laplacian, but the gradient of V squared, the sign will change. This is apparently divergent form because it's first derivative multiplied by function. This, of course, is divergent. This is also almost divergent. You can easily check this thing. This is very important, by the way, factor which shows up in multiplier tech method also. It's exactly this radial function of distance that says the situation. But since we're applying only integration by parts in the boundary, we obtained boundary terms like that, nothing like that. And in principle, boundary can be Lipschitz because what we need for integration by parts. We need rectifiable boundary, bounded domain, nothing else. Time thinking, even this approach, basically after some polishing and correction, can be transformed to general second order operators. Of course, it will be a lot harder than that, but it's not hopeless. I think that there is a pretty good chance to do it. To get these estimates for Lipschitz domains, if you go to technique of pseudo-differential operator symbols, it's highly unlikely that you can do it. There is some limit where these pseudo-differential operators still can work. And there is, I mean, old-fashioned integration by parts still is more powerful if you can do that. But idea, I mean, why I'm writing this form, because idea, I'm not inventing this idea. It is coming right from here. I'm just writing for this particular case of operator. But in this case, further on, I have to use some big theory, relatively big theory, like, for example, Gordink inequality with boundary terms. Here I can do it just integrating by parts, by bare hands. This result, I have under control all boundary terms. They can reduce, all assumptions are minimal in a way it is has advantages. Okay, now how to integrate by parts. For example, I take first term, this term. This term is sum of partial derivatives with respect to second partial derivatives multiplied and this is just partial derivative. I use standard integration by parts formula. I remind you, it's used here that this exterior normal, again, sort of a bit advanced calculus, just nothing more. Now, integrating by parts, and I will be dropping boundary terms also. There will be boundary terms, which I will not write. All boundary terms will be of this type, which is like above. Now, except for boundary terms, what will happen, we will change sign. Because I will move derivative from here to here once. Now here you can observe something. You can observe something if you, it's also XK. There are boundary terms. Non-collecting all remaining terms. Remaining terms that first I differentiate first term here. That's very important term. If you differentiate first term, you obtain a Kronecker delta because it's XK sitting here. Then Kronecker delta. Obtain Kronecker delta, as a result, here you obtain only DJK. This DJV and this JV will be united. As a result, you obtain gradient of V squared. So this is coming if you just differentiate this term. Now, to differentiate this term, I can write it as... Now we'll unite this term with this term. And that's a divergent form, because it's one half of k derivative of d j v squared. And so I'd like to pull out all these squares here. Then I will do this thing. I can write, probably do it a little bit more carefully. And continue integration by parts. Keep this term. And now move derivative from here to that function. What will happen then? Again, there will be boundary terms. But if I differentiate this thing, sum everything Rn minus n, n is dimension of space. And this is gradient of V squared. Okay, about this term, what we have about this term? About this term we have, it is just standard. Bernard J integral, there is almost nothing here. Integrate by parts and obtain, it was with sign minus, we obtain boundary terms plus gradient V. Now, if you count everything carefully, you can see that there is 16 here and 8 here. This thing will cancel. But we still have some positivity left here. And then you can continue. In fact, even more sensitive in the border terms are lower order terms because there is k sitting here. So far, I didn't expect miracles because it's exactly like for Laplace equation. I just show you how to integrate by parts, what I mean by that. But the real business is the very end, but again, for save some time, there is nothing here except of routine and checked very carefully, just computed up to the very end. In the very end, k will not intervene. That's a miracle here. It's not exact miracle because I always have associations with wave equation. No. Positive. Not negative. Negative k just will collapse the whole thing. Because it's wave motion, I like to have domain of frequency estimate is time-independent constants. That's completely new thing, and I was very cautious about that because there is some intuition behind, but this intuition may collapse also. Intuition is that you can always look analogy, but if you have Helmholtz equation for function, say, u, you can make function u capital out of it by using it's a solution of wave equation then. So wave equations are estimates. But that life is still not so easy because this is there are no boundary conditions here in time. So it suggested something, but it's not a proof. I could not benefit anyway from estimates for wave equation. Because not quite controllable on time. And then we need large time, we need something this time, it's not for free. Just cannot do it for any time. Okay, but again, conclusion is that which I'm not finished, it just standard estimates, which need careful checking, even give me 2 hours, or if I give you 2 hours, it will be not enough to be sure that there is really no gap in calculations. I did it several times, and you just continue and prove it. And that's basically idea what is behind of proving Carleman estimates. So there are a couple of ideas. One idea is this substitution. The idea shows up in many things. In estimates which Gunther and John Sylvester did for inverse conductivity of same substitution which change operator but removes exponent from the space. Then just go everything goes to operator. Then there was, of course, cardinal idea of this energy inequality. That's a big idea. But basically, it's not even Hermander's idea. It's idea from theory of hyperbolic equations. Because for hyperbolic equations, you have characteristics. And you cannot write, Fourier analysis does not work, and question what to do in this case. And that was Friedrichs and Zeré and all these big names from 50s who proposed what to do in this case. It was precisely this minor thing. I'm even wondering if Mukhametov integrating factor is precisely the same thing. Because the point, I don't know a second way to do this thing. It's very, very precise. You cannot change anything here. It must be the same operator. You cannot use anything you like. Because it needs a lot of cancellations to make this form divergent. You need to cancel a lot of things. It must be very balanced. Must be very balanced. On other hand, you have not a lot of choice here. Only choice is probably this tau. There is just no freedom at all. There's only one choice. And then I specified this thing for a particular case just to show that it can be checked by hands and can give new results also. For example, boundary terms can be traced, can be done more explicitly, and that's even more important for wave equation. You can do similar things for wave equation. So wave equation, by the way, is a result of integration by parts, and this recently done by Lashichka and Trigiani. It's optimal control community. They obtain these estimates for wave equation with variable coefficients, but using not Euclidean distance, which I used, but Riemannian distance. The same form of function, everything is fits, but of course Riemannian distance is more suitable if you have more general and anisotropic operator also. But easy integration by parts can be done, and I suspect that it can be done also for general operators disregard of any type. Okay, I have, I think, half an hour, and half an hour probably would be enough to show how this thing can be applied to the Kosher problem, uniqueness and stability in the Kosher problem. Just what was behind of Karlmann idea? Because basically he used it to prove uniqueness in the Kosher problem. What I will need is actually only the very top formula number one, Karlmann estimate itself. Now, the geometry of the problem is that we have domain omega. We have gamma, which is part of boundary of omega. We assume here that gamma is C1, smooth enough part. And we are interested in the Kosher problem. AU is equal to F. And we prescribe complete Kosher data at the boundary. Since it is Dirichlet data also given that flux or not flux is not important. Just writing normal derivative. I will assume that U is function in H1 omega, and all other norms will show up in the estimate, so I will not write them right here. Now I will introduce notation. Notation is what is omega epsilon. Omega epsilon is subset of omega, where weight function psi is greater than epsilon. This weight function psi, which is sitting in the function phi. Because typically this function psi is easier. Typically it's quadratic form. Function phi is not. And easier to express everything in very simple terms. Now, the result about this Kosher problem is the following uniqueness theorem. Suppose psi is pseudo-convex. Closure of omega. And the following important condition satisfied. I think must be condition 7. That closure of omega sub 0 is inside of omega and gamma. What this thing saying? It's saying that if you take domain, subdomain where function psi is positive, you obtain some subset of omega. This condition says that closure of this subset can touch boundary of omega only on gamma. So in Carleman estimates, there is no conditions about geometry of domain. This is conditions on function psi. But here, of course, you can see that there are conditions on the boundary right here. Because function psi is not arbitrary pseudo-convex function, it is special pseudo-convex function. If it is elliptic equation, you can build a bunch of these functions, because only conditions gradient of function is not zero. If it's hyperbolic equation, then it's a different question, because it's not arbitrary function anymore. Now, what is conclusion? Conclusion is stability. Then in any subdomain omega epsilon, which is even less than omega, the following stability estimate holds. And F will be norm of our data for our problem. It is L2 norm of function F plus H1 norm of function Dirichlet data and plus L2 norm of function of Neumann data. Theta is some number which depends on between 0 and 1, and both C and theta depend on epsilon. This estimate in the subdomain, if you take, not in the whole domain where you expect unique, if you take smaller subdomain, compact subset, it will be stability. This is not only uniqueness result, it is stability result, which is I consider in a way more important even. For example, if you have analytic functions and Hohengren theorem, don't expect this type of estimates. It gives you uniqueness, but stability is still coming from here. Now, a way to prove this thing is basically use how to function psi behaves on level surfaces, on different level surfaces. You can observe that if that boundary of omega sub zero is zero level surface of function psi. That's exactly where function psi is zero. And boundary of omega sub epsilon is level surface of function psi is equal to epsilon. So function psi is growing toward gamma and decaying away from gamma. On gamma we have Cauchy data. Everything is given on gamma. Outside of gamma, we have nothing. There is no data. And the idea of Carleman is that to use this growth of function psi and using tau large, we can switch this uncontrollable part of gamma completely. Because what is on gamma, function grows. It's oh, sorry. I forgot. Of course, very important. So we have Cauchy data here, everything is given here. But on the remainder of the boundary, there is nothing. No data at all. And question is, if you look at these Carleman estimates, for example, you can see boundary terms. And if you know Cauchy data, the whole boundary, of course, uniqueness follows from Carleman estimate right away. But it's not what we like and what we need. Typically, Cauchy data not given the whole boundary. They're given only part of the boundary. For elliptic equations, they're simply not needed on the whole boundary because Dirichlet data would suffice. You don't need this Cauchy data. For hyperbolic equations and applications, you simply don't have, say, data at final moment of time. Typically, you have them from lateral wall. So you don't have this data applications. And gamma, here it is tailored to elliptic problem, but in more complicated situation, you can imagine time and hyperbolic problem, but I would like to discuss it in the next lecture, probably, in control theory. Okay, now proof of this thing. example of this thing, I like to switch this part, unobservable part of the boundary, so I will introduce cutoff function. Chi will be cutoff function. But this function is 1 on epsilon omega epsilon over 2. Chi is 0 outside omega sub 0. So we can apply Carleman estimates for function chi u. And in this case, uncontrollable part of the boundary will have no boundary term because uncontrollable part of the boundary is function is 0. Uncontrollable part of the boundary, it is something, but it doesn't matter because we have complete Cauchy data. There's nothing more than space in this estimate. Okay, now apply this Carleman estimate. I can write the whole bunch of terms. Now, in Carleman estimate, I had to write estimate for this function. But I will shrink domain of integration to omega epsilon over 2, where function chi is 1. So this integral, which was in the left-hand side, will only decrease. They have bound for greater integral, so we'll keep greater integral. Okay, now it will stay in the right-hand side. I'm just looking at estimate 1 and plugging everything into this estimate. It will be function f, of course, but it's our data. We don't care about this. It's completely controllable. Now, if you use now this operator for this function, of course, in principle part, it will factor out, but there will be first order terms. I can collect these first order terms right here. Plus boundary terms. But only on gamma. Because if you look at this thing, the part of the boundary of omega, which is outside of gamma, is turned off because of this function chi. Function chi is 0 here. Now, that crucial idea again, weighted growth of function, everything here, this alpha is less than 1. Here our alpha is less than 1. There is large parameter sitting in front of the whole thing. Now, I can cut off something right here. If you look, now we can write this integration domain as integration over omega epsilon and over complement. Over omega epsilon, you have this term here, you have this term here. But there is large parameter tau here. Suppose I choose tau large enough. Sorry? Well, this is coming from here. Yeah, and there is only first order derivatives here.
Yeah,
but
we include
kappa. Oh, yes. In fact, they depend on epsilon. That's fine. Epsilon, I allow constants will depend on epsilon. Coefficients of this operator. This constant will depend on epsilon right now because derivative of kappa depend on epsilon. Oh, yes, you're right. So, in fact, it's even better. We can just cut all this thing completely right away because kappa is 1 here, and therefore gradients kappa. I did rougher thing, but in fact, there are only derivatives of kappa participating here. And derivatives are 0 everywhere outside of omega epsilon over 2. Okay, now where the whole Carleman's idea started to work. Now we look how function phi behaves. I shrink this thing even further to omega epsilon. And here is the complement of omega epsilon. Now, what I have right here, I can write right now L1 norm of function over omega epsilon squared and take maximum of this function yes, maximum of this function, or minimum of this function. Minimum of this function will be precisely, it's not exactly epsilon, it will be tau e to the power epsilon. That's what we'll stay here. So I'm taking right now, I think, minimum of this function, increasing in quality. Minimum of this function will be, this function is e to the power lambda psi, and minimum of function psi is epsilon. So this is how this thing shows. Now, here, I simply don't care about what is standing here. It's maximum of function tau, so I will write constant e to the power, factor it out, e to the power, say, 2 tau phi. I have to keep tau, of course. But what is coming out of function phi, I simply don't care about. And there will be antinorm of this function. Of course, it can be, in fact, we need only omega sub zero, but this, in this type of question, doesn't matter. But what is most remarkable, that maximum of this function here is e to the power 2 tau e to the power epsilon over 2. This quantity is less than this quantity. And then I write again thing which I don't know still. Plus boundary terms which I don't care about. So you can take these boundary terms and unite with these terms and call everything F square here. And now ideas, Carleman's idea was the following, that near surface where gamma is prescribed, this function grows faster than this function. So I just simply divide everything by this term, everything which is. I don't care a lot about this term, of course. But about this term, what I have right here, I will have negative quantity here, minus epsilon. Because it subtract greater quantity from smaller quantity. And starting from that, it is device which basically, I think, probably was even done probably before Carleman, at least at this time. There is also Adamar three-circle theorem, which evaluates value of analytic function by values in the smaller disk, larger disk, and evaluates value in the middle disk in between. Tau here, I divided everything. Tau disappeared. Oh, I can erase it. It's a large parameter. I needed it before, but in fact it is not needed. As well observed, I can even do it right here without any tau. If it is true for tau greater than 1, that I can take like that. I simply don't need it because exponential growth, it's so strong that tau simply doesn't matter here. It is needed to remove first-order terms. For example, if you look at this thing, to manipulate the first-order terms, it's not needed any after that. Have first-order terms in your operator or something. That exponential intervention is a lot stronger than that, because it just dumps everything. And now at this stage, what I like to do, I like to do funny things. I just like to minimize with respect to tau, but it's a pretty complicated thing. So I just like to make these terms equal. Do naive thing. And to make them equal, I take F square now, this all for tau as a result. For tau, this quantity is probably right at vice versa, probably first in the denominator. This is typically, is roughly speaking, less than 1, because we have normal function here. we have traces of function here. So I'm writing that this ratio is equal to e to the power, and writing everything into this side, too, also here. Just nothing but simple substitution. We should be tau is a small, very simple argument which shows that we don't care about that, because if this quantity is small, that this is bounded by it. So we don't care about it. We can consider case when the quantity is large enough, because otherwise this thing is bounded by this small quantity. And we have, certainly we have estimate which is fitting here. And therefore tau will be, we can solve for this tau, and probably even can plug this tau into estimate. Now we have to solve for that. To show that actually after substitution we obtain precisely what is fitting here. That was probably something in the 30s which was pursued. Take logarithm of both parts. And divide logarithm by phi minus cancels these two. Now plugging everything into this formula, which is probably the cheapest way to this formula. This term and this term are equal, the same term. I'm just plugging into this term and see what will happen. E to power, we obtain certainly power of u divided by f. It will be now squared right here. And then divided by what will be total power. This phi divided by phi plus this term will be sitting here and multiply by f squared. Now you can count total powers to obtain precisely this term which is sitting here. So this is positive quantity. What is very important for us is important that f enters with positive power, well, not with negative power. If it is negative power of f, then we have no estimate. But we have f is squared here, and this is less than 1. So if you calculate that, precisely this ratio is theta, 1 minus theta. And that's basically idea of Carlyman, basically pushed to the very end, to whatever have right now is boundary terms. It is pushed to the very end because boundary terms, it is minimal smoothness you expect here. You cannot go below that. It's just L2 norm of derivatives. That's coming from this type of Carlyman estimates and L2 norm of for first order derivatives. Okay, probably to conclude, I have no time to talk about Helmholtz equation. I just can give you form of estimate for Helmholtz equation. I have probably 5 minutes. Oh, choice of psi enters because we like to fit this geometry. First of all, psi should be pseudo-convex because we need estimate. Second, psi should fit this geometry. Yes. Into gamma, even moreover. Because if you cut a part of the domain where psi is greater than zero, this part of the boundary, closure of this part of the boundary, can intersect boundary of basic domain only on gamma. In other words, if you just naively look at this thing, look at zero level curve of this function, it must start and end on gamma. And that's a choice of psi. If it is elliptic equation for psi, there are no restrictions. You can always do that. Or if we have complicated topology, we can split domains into simple domains, tehomeomorphic to ball, just do it in any ball. That's just banality. If it is hyperbolic equations, that's pretty complicated. The geometry, how things interact with this. It's very obscure. Now, what is happening in Helmholtz equation? In Helmholtz equation, I can do the same thing, but I can obtain pretty interesting answer. Answer will be if I sacrifice a little bit here, then I can obtain frequency in denominator. And on fingers, how it's working on fingers. On fingers of Helmholtz equation, special geometry. This not for general geometry, it's for geometry which looks like respects n axis, remaining variables. This is gamma, where prescribe our data. And that's where it's omega epsilon that they obtain stability estimate. What is happening in this direction for Helmholtz equation? Because for Helmholtz equation, we can split by using Fourier projectors, we can split solutions to high frequency and low frequency part by using Fourier transform and X prime variables. It turns out that transformed equation will be hyperbolic for low frequencies. Because if you look at this equation, that will be that partial with respect to n plus k square minus its remaining variables. Oh, sorry. Yes. And so if xi prime is less than k, that solution of this ODE gives you sines and cosines. It preserves energy. So it's a solution of hyperbolic equation. This is what is responsible for this part f. But now if you go to high frequency part, but high frequency that u sub zero will be bounded on high frequency part by unity over k times hy norm. But it's not u function u1, it's high frequency part of function u1. Part which is where Fourier transform by epsilon will, xi is greater than k. Because the definition of Fourier transform immediately gives you the fanatic. But for this function, I can repeat previous argument for Carlyman estimates. It obtains this Carlyman estimate is constant k independent. I then glue all together and I obtain increased stability for Kosher problem for the, at least for Helmholtz equation at this stage. Okay, just side remark. Is this geometry important? For example, I wrote very special geometry in this case. Geometry is that we go inside of convex hull of gamma. This way we solve our Kosher problem. Question is, can we go outside of convex hull of gamma and have the same stability estimate? And the answer is no way, because after long thinking and some errors, I remembered paper which I knew very well, in fact. It is a famous paper of Reed John of 1960. When I read it very carefully, I found that his example is really magnificent example. It shows that if you go in this direction, the best you can obtain is logarithmic stability. Not only increasing in frequency, you even cannot obtain these powers right here. And the example itself is a miracle because he did it almost out of nothing, out of Bessel's function. But it was property of Bessel's function which is so hard to observe and very hard to prove. And I think only now I somehow figured out what it means. It means that convexity is pretty important thing. So if you're talking about wave motion, if you try example, I can even write, it shows that this estimate, even without k-independence, is impossible. If you continue, for example, if you continue from outside of union disk, so if you have solution of Helmholtz equation given inside of union disk, try to evaluate it at some distance. This is one, say, distance 2. Actually, at any distance, 1 plus plus delta from here. That at any distance, 1 plus delta of here, any norm of function u cannot evaluate L2 norm of function absolution, say, a little layer on disk of radius 1 plus delta, with functions better than logarithm. Even if you have function everywhere here. That is absolutely sharp. And first of all, thinking if you can do a lot of things, go to variable coefficients. But this variable coefficient should be careful because of that. It certainly will not go for free for variable coefficients. It needs some, again, pseudo-convexity assumption something. But the point is that increased stability is a very important issue. It is not just because we have another estimate and sort of. Because it says that in convex hull, we really can increase resolution of ill-posed problems. And increase them, say, if you have electromagnetic frequency, increase it quite a bit. This is paper by the communication in pure applied mathematics, 1960. An example is one page, it's a brilliant example, just masterpiece of work. Out of that, I mean, people just wrote huge papers out of that. After and Fritz John never mentioned it. I talked to him several times. He never even mentioned this thing. He told that what hurt the area is instability. And that was his only remark about the whole area of universe problem. Okay, thank you very much. I think.